to season 4 of the podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Blackwood. If you've never listened to my podcast before, then welcome to you, and please hit that subscribe button. It's hugely beneficial to us podcasters. As many of you know, I wrote my autobiography as a survivor of human trafficking called Custom Justice, but if you didn't know, you do now. Keeping in line with that, this entire season has been focused on interviewing other people who did or plan to write about their own experiences as trauma survivors and how they overcame their past. As much as we all hate commercials, they are a necessary evil these days. That's what keeps the show on the air. You can also show support by purchasing one of my many books, or donating through PayPal, or leaving a review on whatever platform you listen to this podcast on. You can find the links for the books or donation options in the podcast description, of course, as well as the links to the guest. As of always, a portion of the proceeds from this podcast do go to local organizations that help fight human trafficking. Hey folks, welcome back to the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Amanda Blackwood. I have such a fun guest with me today. We've already been talking together for 15, 20 minutes before even coming into the recording, just because she is that much fun. You guys are going to love her energy. You're going to really recognize her story in a lot of yourselves. So welcome to the show, Maureen Scanlon.
Hello, Amanda. I'm so happy to be here. Guests, all right. Listeners, I want to say I had Amanda as a guest and she was fantastic. So it's a no-brainer that I would be here today so we can continue our conversation.
And Maureen, I just love you to pieces. You're just so awesome. Tell these people what your podcast is so they can go and find you.
Oh, love you for that. Thank you. So my podcast is called I Never Knew, But My Dog Did. And we're on all platforms, YouTube, all that fun stuff. And basically, it's the same thing as like yours. We're trying to do good in the world by sharing stories of what we've been through, struggle, heartbreak, trauma. So people can listen and say, oh my gosh, that's where I'm at. How do I? And I think it's healing for everybody when we share our stories and we relate to each other to say, hey, I've been there too. And that's really why I started it, why I'm so passionate about it. And having guests like you on, we just find these threads of synchronicity where it's like, oh, I need to meet you. I need to talk to you. And our listeners are the beneficiaries of that.
Yes. It's so cool that I have the opportunity to talk to amazing people like yourself. I probably wouldn't have ever met you or had a conversation with you if I hadn't decided that, you know, it's time to start talking about all this stuff. So
isn't that incredible? Like, we have no idea who is going to be attracted to our path, and there's always a reason for it. So I would say it's we're teaching or we're learning, and here we are. And yes, I would probably not have cross paths with you, darn it. But you're in Denver and I'm in Austin and my husband's from Denver. So, and my stepson. So you never know.
Absolutely. And you know, we hear constantly these days, find your tribe. It's hard to find your tribe if you're not willing to talk about it.
Yeah. And you don't have to find them. I've learned through the podcast, through the books, through the coaching. I am not a salesy girl. So I'm just one of these where I'm just like, you know, build it and they will come. And I have found that when I'm in that vibration, people just show up. And right. And that's the fun. Like you're recording, you know, 8-9 months out, you have, you know, a long list of guests wanting to be on it. That's how you know you're bringing it, and you will attract your tribe. You don't have to do anything to work at it. It just happens.
Yep, absolutely. The people will show up. So yep. Maureen, I know you're in Austin, Texas now. Where did you grow up? Are you always from Texas?
No, ironically, we just moved here. I've only been here for 4 months. I grew up in Arizona, Glendale, Arizona, specifically. I did get married very young at 18, and he joined the military, and then we moved, and we were stationed in Germany for 4 years.
Oh, that's where I was born.
Heidelberg?
K-Town.
Kaiser. Oh, my daughter was born in Heidelberg. Love it. Yeah. And then we were transferred to Monterey, California, which I absolutely love that area. That's where I want my ashes spread, is right there, you know, on the 18 mile drive. But then we came back to Arizona, and I was in Arizona the entire time until December, when my little munchkin, my sunshine girl, my middle daughter, is telling us that she's having a baby. And so then we were like, uh-oh. So 60 days, sold a house, bought a house, moved to Austin, and we are on baby watch. Ooh. We have, she's right about 35 weeks. So, yeah, August 15th is her due date. And so here we are in Austin.
Man. So you bought a new house, you sold your other house all within 60 days. How unusual is that?
You know what, though? I think it's my personality, and I know you are exactly like me. It's like when I make my mind up to do something, and listeners, if there's any advice I can give, it's this. Just do it. Just yep. do it. Just like Nike says, just do it. When you overthink or think too much about something and weigh this out and weigh this out, sometimes I have found the best things in my life have been when I just jumped off that cliff and was like, whatever happens, happens.
You know, I'm very grateful my husband and I are the same way when it comes to this kind of stuff. When we make up our mind to do something, we just go and do it. It's time. Let's do it. Let's go for it.
I love it. It's part of what we were talking about. We got on air, we were talking about how we became sort of coping in crisis. And so I feel like we take more risks because sometimes I think my mentality for a long time was, well, it can't get any worse than this. And so I think it felt like this kind of risk taking mentality. And then it started working out for the best rather than worse.
Right. You know, there can be some danger in that thinking, you know, it can't get worse or I've been through worse.
True. You know,
and I've seen that a lot of people, and I actually saw that in myself. So just a little weird side tangent here. In the middle of my trafficking, I had a plane ticket to get out of Scotland, but I had to wait 5 days for that flight because I couldn't afford anything sooner than that. And during that time, I told myself, I've been through worse. I can last the next 5 days of going through this abuse to get on that flight. And what I didn't know was that I was going to be abused to the point where I ended up with kidney failure. And I was in the hospital when the flight took off and I missed the flight. It was non-refundable. So I lost everything that I'd spent on it. Now, that mentality of thinking I've been through worse can be so dangerous because it leaves us in that place of danger of being in survival mode for so long that we forget that we don't have to go through worse. Did I lose you again? You got really quiet.
I'm here.
Oh, there you are.
I'm here. I think that's like a sort of that programming of desperation, or even like, I need a thread of hope. I think it's how it's definitely self-preservation. You know, when we say it can't be worse, because if we think it's the worst, that's when we end up with suicidal ideation, or we end up just not trying anymore. We have no motivation to try. So I think it's a programming of dealing with trauma.
Yes, I would agree. Yeah, and there's definitely good and bad to it, as it is with most trauma reactions.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your trauma. What is it that you had to go through to be able to get you on this path in your life now?
So as I mentioned, I was married young. And so I was 19 and I was pregnant, 3 months pregnant. Get this, I got pregnant literally a month after I had sex for the first time. So unfair. I know.
Oh,
I know.
No.
And I had waited, you know, because my mother was insistent that, you know, it's something you give your husband. And so I had waited and I didn't have any knowledge of sex or anything like that. My mother was very conservative, very Irish Catholic. And so we didn't have a birds and the bees talk. I didn't know really anything. And so it sounds silly, but I should have known, but I was very naive. So I get married, 3 months pregnant. He goes and joins the military without even telling me. And so it started even before he left. Excuse me. So he had me up against the wall. I'm pregnant, choking me. And I find out he has a drug addiction, which I did not know about. And of course, I'm trying to get out of my house. My household was very strict. Didn't have a lot of freedom. Couldn't really express myself. There was not a lot of nurturing. We didn't say, I love you. There was not really hugs. We had everything we needed. And I know they did the best they could based on how they were raised, but it was definitely lacking emotionally. And so I already have this codependent mentality of make people happy. And so I'm like, I'll fix you. I'll help you. Should have left the very first time he had me up against the wall choking me. But my family said, once you're out, you're out. There's nothing. You cannot come back. You made your bed, lie in it. So he leaves 16 days after we get married. I go through the entire pregnancy and the birth. Nobody in the room with me. My family disowned me because they didn't want me to get pregnant. And so I think they were coming when I was leaving the hospital. I think someone was coming and I can't even remember, but no one showed up after I had the baby. And so finally, 3 months in, I call my husband and said, look, I need to get over there. You need to find a place. So I go over to Germany. Finally, we get a place. We live on the economy because he's too low rank. He was right out of basic training. He's too low a rank to have military housing. So we are broke, and I mean broke, like couldn't afford to dry our clothes, had to call. We had met other couples that had one baby and they were a young couple. We would call each other because you get paid once a month in the military. We'd call each other about halfway through the month or about the third week and say, what do you have in your cupboards? And we would all, six of us and three babies, get together to make dinner. Because no one had enough money to feed their families. And the military then, and this is in the 90s, this is when Desert Storm was happening. They were not very good at protecting families because they say, we didn't assign you a family. So you're kind of on your own. And when you're on the economy living off base, you have to pay. And if you think about it, back in this was 1990, we were paying $800 a month for rent. We made $1,000. You have to have a phone, and we didn't have a car yet. So you're talking, I had $200 left after paying the rent. Oh, you have to pay water, hot and cold water, which is really weird. And you had to have a phone required. So really, I would say you had about $100 left for an entire month to live on. And I don't know anybody that could do that today, let alone back then. So it was really stressful. He'd never been a father. He'd never been a husband. And the abuse started. What I found out was when I was pregnant and doing all my stuff in Arizona, didn't have the baby, he was acting like Mr. Single Guy, hanging out in the barracks, drinking with the guys every day. And so he's an alcoholic. And at that time, I don't know how it is now, the military kind of breeds alcoholics. And I'll tell you why. A case of beer at that time at the commissary or the little, they have like little convenience store or military, was $3. A case of beer for $3. And if you weren't buying that, they would encourage you, go to the NCO club. So they really encouraged drinking because they wanted the guys to relax. And it really ruined so many families. So he's an alcoholic, and he was the type of alcoholic that had blackouts. So he had blackout rage. And I don't mean like he passed out on the couch blackout. I mean, he forgot what he was doing. And so one time I remember him getting so mad, he picked me up and he threw me about 6 or 8 feet across the room. And I fell on the chair, on the armchair, my head, and it burst my eardrum.
Oh.
And so this was kind of, you know, the beginning of how it was in this marriage. And I ended up being married to him for 11 years. I don't know how I did that, but it was just, we were talking before we were recording, Amanda, and like I said, most abusers are very covert, and it's just they do along the way that sort of groom you to accept this is what you deserve. This is what you're supposed to put up with. And my mother was a very servient, because she definitely had opinions. But when it came to my father, she backed down and she would do whatever he would say. And so I kind of was programmed that it doesn't matter what you think, even if you have opinions. And I did, I was mouthy too. But ultimately, the man has the say. Whenever the man does, you have to put up with it and you have to follow. There was nowhere I could go anyway. I'm in another country with no money. What am I going to do? I can't buy a ticket and come home. Where would I go? So it was really a feeling of helplessness. And so it continued. And we'd go to AA. He would, you know, start the program. I'd go to Al-Anon, and then he'd go back, you know, to drinking or hiding it. And I wouldn't know. And just that repetitive cycle. Until I found out he was cheating. And then when I found out he was cheating, that was my line in the sand. And the thing is everyone has a different line in the sand. And I remember my daughter being in an abusive marriage, and I remember her getting injured really bad with broke her arm in several places, needing plates and screws. And I remember the phone call with her saying, she said, if he's drinking again. And I was like, what? That's your line in the sand? That's your line in the sand. He destroyed and broke your arm into several pieces, and you're just worried if he's drinking again. And I literally hung up that phone with my daughter and called her back and said, oh my God, I'm so sorry that I said that. Because I did the same thing. I put up with the abuse, but the cheating was where I drew the line. And people have asked me, why was the cheating drawing the line? And I realized I had this epiphany moment that if I told people he was abusing me, then I looked like a fool. Why would I put up with that? Why would you do that? You're a really intelligent woman. Why would you let someone do that? But by breaking up with him and divorcing him over cheating, it was a no-brainer. He looked like the fool and the idiot. So it was very much a shame-driven reason why I couldn't do anything until it was like clear-cut and black and white where he was going to look like the jerk. And it wasn't because of the abuse, it was because of cheating.
Wow. So you went through so much, and then to watch your daughter go through the same thing, do you think that she was more open to accepting the abuse in her life because she saw you accepting the abuse in yours?
Trigger.
Sorry, I know that's a really hard question, and it's a sharp double-edged sword, because the answer can be yes and no.
Oh, let me tell you. Okay, so mommy guilt at its finest right there. So I remember one time he was losing his mind. He was, pushing me around, throwing stuff, which he would only throw stuff that mattered to me. And I remember looking across the room and seeing my girls, who were 6 and 8 at the time, at their little table in the corner looking at me. And that was my moment, like, holy crap. Like, if you're going to put up with it, Marina, it's one thing, but you're literally showing these girls right now, that's the kind of man you choose. That's the kind of man that can do whatever he wants to you. When you go out in the world and you get a relationship and
oh, you just went quiet.
Are you there?
Yep, there you are.
Oh, sorry. So it was seeing them watch this and me thinking, oh my gosh, I'm putting up with this, that I'm teaching them this, out into the world and have a relationship and pick a guy like this. And that was really a big moment for me to say no. But they were 6 and 8, and I don't know what was instilled. So right. I had guilt. I definitely had that mommy guilt. I divorced him. And so when my daughter started getting in these abusive relationships, she got pregnant at 17, and she was in these dysfunctional and domestic violence relationships. Of course, I felt horrible. Like, it's all my fault. I didn't get her out. This is the kind of dad I picked for them. And it ate me alive for years. And so I enabled her. And I enabled her to not have to grow, not have to face her bad choices. I did everything for her to prevent her from feeling alone like I did, or from not having finances to watching her kids for her. I did everything out of my own internal projection of feeling guilty and what I had been through. And I did a huge disservice to my daughter. And there was a moment I was sitting with some friends and I had a breakdown and a breakthrough where I had to realize I have to let go of that guilt. Yes. Because I have two other children that they're those issues. So I had to finally say, it's not your fault. He's the kind of parent he is. It's not your fault. He did the things that he did. And your daughter has choices to accept it or copy it. Whichever one she wants to do, she can do something different or she can do something the same. That was the biggest, I think, moment in my life where I could let it all go now and say, you know what? I was a good mom. I did the best that I could. I can't help that you witnessed what you witnessed. And that's maybe the lesson that you needed to learn for yourself, to choose a better man or to speak your truth. And so, yeah, that's a hard question.
Yeah. I mean, she was there to be able to witness you get the strength to get out.
Right. That's what I was hoping. And you never know with children. I mean, it's a crapshoot. You don't have any say really in what they take in and what they filter out and what they delete. And like I said, you know, my little Jordan, my daughter who's pregnant now, she picked a wonderful man. She just got married at 31 or at 30, and now she's having a baby at 31, and her husband is fantastic. My son is the best. He's got a fiance. He's really attentive and loving and kind in his relationship. So I had to finally just say, I didn't cause anything that happened in my children's lives. They have their own life to live.
Yes.
So that was really letting go of the guilt. And if there's any listener out there, and I know we do this, a lot of us will get out of these and still continue making peace with the other parent for the co-parenting, but still taking the abuse. I saw something, I was going through life coaching stuff and I was doing categories and I saw something called post-separation abuse. And I was like, oh yeah, because yeah, there's abuse and you get out of the relationship for a reason or the, but notice, and you'll hear this on true crime, the most dangerous part of, you know, of relationship and the risk of being killed or injured is after you leave.
Yes.
There's this post-separation abuse where now there's no love and kindness. They're not trying to be good to you to stay in the relationship. Now all their nastiness is right there in that post-separation abuse of using the kids, using money, using everything against you to continue to abuse you. That's when we have to stand up and be the strongest that we have ever been. And in my coaching, I do divorce coaching and breakup coaching, because that's the moment you need to be the strongest and the more steadfast on separating yourself from them. No contact, no responses, talking only about children, sticking to the facts, no emotions. So I saw that the other day.
Right. And I lived through some of that myself. So when I got divorced from my son's father, he used my son in horrible ways to be able to manipulate and try to force me into still having an intimate relationship with him when I didn't want to, when I was done.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it's so common for people to do this. They treat children like they're pawns.
Yep. Yep. It absolutely is. And I, that's really common to say, I'm going to give them what they want while we're going through this thing, because then it'll be, you know, less treacherous, and maybe they'll give me the car that I want, or maybe they'll be, you know, less apt to fight with me over when I want the kids when it's on their time. I mean, it's still manipulation. It's still abuse. It doesn't stop. And the only way it stops is when we finally get like rules in black and white, and just like a restraining order, doesn't matter if they're going to do it, they're going to do it. A paper's not going to stop it, but you have legal grounds to stand on. And I find people that have been in abusive situations, and I learned this from my divorce. I learned after the divorce is when you're most emotional, and that's when you're most apt to give in to stuff. And I always say this, when you're going through a divorce, men or women, when you're going through a divorce, I want you to do the paperwork as if yourself 10 years from now were writing it. Because then you'll have the parenting that you want. You'll have the finance that you want. You'll have the property that you want. Because when we're too emotional right afterwards, we give in to stuff. How many people have you heard that say, I wish I would have asked for this, or I wish I wouldn't have given in. I just wanted it over with. That's another one. It drags out, drags out, drags out. And they're like, I just gave in. I let him have my 401k. Or I just let them have 50-50 custody. Don't do it. Fight it. Fight as long as you can, and write those papers as if the person, your future self 10 years from now, were writing them when you have no more emotion left for this person.
Yeah. Oh, such beautiful advice, man. I wish I had been able to do that at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes it's easier said than done. You know, it's nobody saying that this is going to be an easy thing to do by any stretch of the imagination, but it's worth it to do it. You got to do the work.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, it's funny that, Amanda, you and I were saying how wonderful we have the husbands we have now are so wonderful and supportive and loving and unconditional. And how'd we get here? And that's what I said to you was, we did the work, man. Like, we cleared out all that garbage, and we finally said, which is my, it's really my brand. I learned how to be my own best friend finally. Because I think about, what would I tell my best friend now? You know, if I have something going on, what would I tell my best friend? That's being my own best friend, is saying, I'm going to be loving and kind and compassionate and patient to myself, have grace on myself, encourage myself, affirm myself, the things that are good about me. That's what I never knew. That's what I didn't do, was make myself feel good and proud.
Well, I mean, it's not an easy thing to learn when you've never had that modeled for you.
Yeah. Right.
So how do you get from point A to point B? What did you have to do to be able to get yourself through all of it and to heal from it?
Yeah. Hopefully I can curse on here, but I tell everyone that comes for life coaching, I always say you have to be so tired of your shit that you'll be able to change. Because if you're not tired of it, you're going to go right back to it, and you're going to stay in the cycle of insanity. But I got so tired of it that I was finally in, even relationships where I wasn't married to them, they were psychologically abusive and narcissistic. And I just, this pattern kept continuing until, and it was just over and over. And I had to sit with myself and go, what is the common denominator here? Well, it's me. Well, what is it about that's drawing these people in and keeping them in and allowing them to keep doing what they're doing? And that was ugly, dark work. That was sitting on my bed crying, you know, bawling my eyes out. I'm not worthy. Why can't someone just love me? Why can't, you know, someone give me what I give them? It's really the story behind my writing the books about dogs, and I have a dog boutique and everything, the podcast, I Never Knew my Dog Did. It all comes from sitting on that bed crying in those just moments of despair. And my dogs were sitting next to me, and just looking at me with the utmost unconditional, you are my life, you are my universe, eyes. And that was like these moments of, oh my God, look at how much they love you. Why do you love you like they do? They see something in you. And that was the, I started off and I used the acronym BONE because of my puppies. And the first step was bravery, doing something I had never done before. I never had dinner alone. I never went to a movie alone. I never did anything alone. I realized my identity was I had to be a couple or else I didn't feel worthy. I thought the world was judging me and I wasn't good enough unless I had someone beside me. So bravery, I started doing things alone, going hiking, took a solo vacation. I, you know, all these things I'd never done. And people talk to me and laugh. I walk away going, hey, wait a minute. I am kind of cool. You know, I fun. I don't have to have someone on my arm to be worthy. So that was the first thing. The other thing was just being observant. It meant, what couples do I see that inspire me? What kind of qualities do other people have that I to have? And it was confidence. It was being proud, like the affirmations, being proud of the things. I had to observe the things about myself that were good. Stop focusing on what's bad. And that was that self-care thing. I had never taken care of me, ever. I was behind everything and everyone. I was the last one on the totem pole. So I didn't do any self-care. I didn't work out. I was in a relationship so psychologically abusive. He ended up going to jail for aggravated harassment. And I had restraining orders for 7 years. And I was in bed by like 5:30 every night. 5:30 every night. I didn't leave the house. He kept me basically in a cage. And I ended up getting skin cancer. I ended up getting cervical cancer. I ended up, I have osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis. I ended up walking with a cane at 38 years old. Oof. So So I wasn't doing anything necessary for myself, and that emotional overspill just came out physically, and I was just getting worse and worse. So definitely self-care, guys. That's really, really important. The last one is E, expectant. I learned that here's the difference. People go out with expectations. And this is something I learned after I was healing, when I finally would go out dating, which I suggest you wait at least 1 year when you're getting out of something traumatic or any breakup. Do a whole year by yourself, getting to know yourself, travel with yourself, love yourself, build up everything, health, you know, emotion, spirit, so you're your best self. Then when you go out in the world, you will attract people at your healthiest place. So when you go out dating, I think this is the thing. When we're not healed, we go out with expectations. And expectations are, oh, this is going to be my next husband, or this guy's going to be Prince Charming. I've said to many people, and this is something that's important, stop making things about expectations and just be expectant. So when I went out dating, I wasn't going out there like, I hope this guy isn't a narcissist. I hope he's, you know, good to me. I didn't do that. I went out saying, I'm expecting to have a really good meal and a really good conversation with someone. And boy, did my dating life change. Because then I sat across from someone going, I hope you're worthy of me. Instead of me saying, I need to earn your admiration and your, you know, whatever, your love. And, you know, I stopped doing all that. Then I was so comfortable in my own skin finally that I didn't go out with any expectations of future. I just went out there mindfully, just intentionally saying, I'm going to have fun tonight. That's it.
Oh my gosh. That's fantastic. Yeah. And it makes such a difference when you do spend that time by yourself. In my case, it made such a difference that I ended up with four cats. But in most people's cases, they come away with this understanding more about who they are. Who are you on the your goals? What are your dreams? Stop tying yourself to the dreams of another person and wanting to push them where it is that they're trying to get to. Worry about where it is that you're wanting to go and what you're wanting to do.
Oh, I love that. I love that when you come from a background, whether it's your childhood or, you know, these damaging relationships, no one cares about how you feel. No one's asked how you felt. Everything you've done your whole life was geared toward what does somebody else need to be emotionally stable? And that's a hard thing, isn't it? To say, oh, I can focus on me. Isn't that selfish? No, no, it is not selfish. Because you have to be your best in order to be the best for anybody.
Right.
First.
And if you really want to think about who's being selfish, think about the one person who's thinking about themselves over there and expecting you to think about them also.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
That is selfish.
Yes. Yes. 100%. I love that you said that. That's, yeah. Why is when you're in that mindset, that unhealthy mindset, why is it okay that they can think about themselves only and then you think about them too, but you're not allowed to have those moments of you and really asking. And I think a lot of that is when you've been in survival mode, you don't think about those deeper things. You just think about, where's my next meal coming from? Am I safe in this moment? You really don't get into those deep self-awareness things because you honestly don't have time. You're in crisis. You're in coping mode, right?
Yep. And you stay there as long as you allow yourself to stay there.
Yeah. Until you get tired of it. Cause you do, you get wore out. Your body, your mind, your spirit, your soul gets to a point. I think we all do. I think every guest that comes on your podcast and on mine, we all had to reach a point where we're like, I'm just tired. Tired of feeling exhausted and trying to survive and trying to scrape by and not feeling good enough. And that's when the change happens. You have to get to the point where you're just so tired of where you are.
And it's just like when you go to Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, you have to be in the position to be ready to help yourself. You cannot walk into a therapist's office thinking, well, they can fix me. They have a magic wand. They don't have no magic wand. They can't just wave something at you and say, all right, ta-da, you're healed. There's no set time frame. They can't say, come see me every week for the next year and you'll be done. They don't know. You don't know. Nobody knows what it's going to take to heal until you start really getting into it. But you have to be willing to get the work done. I tell people all the time that when I saw my second therapist, I approached it very matter-of-factly. And I told her, do not come at me with walking on eggshells or treating me like I'm a porcelain doll, because if I was going to break, I would have broke already. And number two, don't come at me with prescription medications, because I don't want a Band-Aid. I want a shovel.
Yes. Okay, listeners, I have to interrupt. Mic drop right there. Thank you. We don't need to medicate everything away. There's other ways to do it. There really, really is. I love that you said that.
You got to dig deep.
Yeah. And you know what I realized recently, Amanda, is you don't go through like, oh, I'm healed. You're healed. You're never completely healed. And it's so funny. I'm in this healthy place in my life, like financially, in my marriage with my kids. You know, triggers still pop up. There is stuff that still pops up. And it's like, let me give a good analogy. It's like you're just sitting there minding your own business and something smacks you on the side of the head. And you're like, hey, where did that come from?
Yeah.
I didn't deserve that, you know. And I still to this day have stuff. My husband and I just had an argument 2 days ago. We had a conflict. Boom, did that pop up. Something popped up. And I'm like, hey, what are you doing? You're not supposed to pop your head up. That was resolved. But it isn't always resolved. And what I have found is it might present itself in different ways with different people. And that's really crucial to be open to that when you start the journey, to just say, hey, some things are going to come to light that I don't even know are in there. There's a lot of deep subconscious stuff in there. I'm intentionally and consciously fixing things that I think I know. But then remember, guys, there's going to be some stuff subconsciously stuck in there that does need to come out. It might be 5 years, 10 years, or 20 years, but at least it's coming out, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so important to let the people in your life know that you've had to deal with crap. And if you have these reactions, it has nothing to do with them. It has everything to do with the people who injured you in the past. And it breaks my heart when I get in the conversation with somebody who says, well, I just don't tell my partner, my boyfriend, my husband about anything that happened to me because that's in the past. And I've moved on from that. No, you have not.
No. Not good. Not good. Because those ghosts are coming out. Whether you tell them or not, ghosts are going to come out. And you're just going to be like, where the hell did that come from? Why did that happen? And vulnerability is part of true intimacy. If you can't be completely open and honest and vulnerable about the stuff that you've been through, then do you really know a person? Do they really know you? I want my husband to know everything, the good, bad, and the ugly, and love me unconditionally because of that. Not avoid those conversations. Yeah, the past is the past. Nobody said you have to, I always call it like a file. Think about your trauma, you know, being in a file in the cabinet. You can pull it out, pull the file out and read it every day, or you can just tuck it away and say it's there. And every now and then I might want to read through it and then put it back in the drawer. Right. But I do think being an open book with your partner is absolutely crucial to have the most honest, healthy relationship. And you can read more about that in my book, My Dog is My Relationship Coach, which I talk about all these different things that I'd gone through and how I ended up being able to have these healthier relationships and better marriage. And I was not good. So thank God for my dogs.
So where do people go to grab a copy of your book?
I am everywhere. I'm on Outskirts Press. I'm on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Target, you name it. But you can also go to my website and order it right or buy it right there. It's lifecoachmaureen.com. And that also has info about the podcast, the other books, as well as my doggy boutique, where I make homemade healthy treats for your puppies, and we make handmade really cute bandanas and fun stuff. That's mydogiseverything.net. So I'm excited about that.
That's awesome.
That one's really fun. We're doing like these really cool markets around Austin, and I freaking love Austin people because it's such a dog city. And every time we go do a market on the weekend, we have one this weekend on Saturday, and literally I get to sit in Austin at our booth and have 30 or 40 dogs visit me, like, who, and make money. So like, how can it be any better than that? Like, hello, heaven. Yes.
So your dog is your relationship coach, but everybody else's doggy is just your emotional support life.
Right? There's no such thing as a service dog because they're all emotional support animals. I am so all about the puppies. And my first book is My Dog is More Enlightened Than I Am. And that was really what we're talking about today, Amanda, is that whole discovering myself and finding myself and learning to love myself. So guys, listeners, if you want to, you know, start with the first one, if you're in that place of needing healing. And then the other one is once you're ready to start that dating, or if you're in a committed relationship that's not as fulfilling as it could be, then that second book is really good too.
Yes, I think what you're doing is just fantastic. I love that you're a life coach now and you're helping people to understand this stuff about them and to get through these hard times and to, you know, really start to dig deep, grab that shovel, stop using the Band-Aids, grab that shovel, start digging deep and figure it all out. I just think it's admirable. I think you are amazing and I love you.
Oh my gosh, I love you too. And I love your vulnerability and your willingness to be open about this on your podcast and your book. It takes a lot. It takes a lot to be able to share those shame stories and what we've been through. And there's that sort of risk of being judged, but we're doing it for the greater good, right? I mean, we are being the voice that our younger selves needed. I think that's our purpose here. At least I know it's my purpose is to touch the starfish story. It mattered to that one. So if I touch one person that sends out a ripple in the world, I've done my job.
I love that you brought up the starfish story. I end so many of my public speaking events with that story and throw my own spin into it, literally, by getting star-shaped motivational quote, stress balls and throwing those out into the audience like they're my ocean.
Oh my gosh, synchronicities, there you go. I always say there's that synchronicity, like spirited. I love that. That's my whole thing is just be the difference to that one person that, you know, you didn't have when you were going through something.
Yeah, I always tell people, as one person, you may think that you cannot change the whole world, but as one person, you can change the whole world for someone else.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, Maureen, thank you.
There's always one last question that I ask my people before I let them go. It's my favorite question. I always ask it. So what is one thing that you love about yourself not related to your physical appearance?
You're going to laugh. I think you're all going to laugh, but I love this. I just found out that I am high functioning autism spectrum.
Really? That's fascinating.
I know. I was taking a course on coaching people that are neurodivergent. I was diagnosed with ADHD years and years ago, about 20 years ago. And I had these things that I do, and I'm studying, taking this course, and I'm certified in, and there's a quiz, and they say, you know, go to this website and take this quiz, and I take this quiz, and it says, very highly likely you are on the autism spectrum. And it used to be called Asperger's. So they don't call it that anymore. It's autism spectrum level one. And I'm actually proud of that. And I think it gave me some insight as to why I understand so many people, because not knowing that I had this gift, and I'm calling it a gift, because I think it gives me the ability and insight that some people aren't able to have. I think differently. I'm wired differently, and my quirks, I love my quirks, and yeah, it's what I love. So I'm happy.
It just so happens I love your quirks too, lady. You're awesome.
So autistic, ADHD, neurodivergent, unite. And there's no shame in anything that is you. That's the line I want to leave you with. There's no shame in one single shred or cell of who you are. None. You're fabulously and beautifully here as a beautiful soul to make a difference and a change. You just got to find that purpose.
If you've enjoyed tonight's episode, please make sure you check out the episode description. There you'll find links on how you can learn more about this guest, links to connect with them on social media, and how to support the podcast. Remember, I don't get paid to do this. My boss is a bit tight-fisted. I can say that. I work for myself. In short, this show really is all about the guest. If you've enjoyed their interview, please feel free to let them know. You can also tune in to my other podcast, Growth from Darkness, which is co-hosted by a lovely lady from Australia. We talk about what trauma responses are and healthy ways to move beyond the past. For more information, just go to growthfromdarkness.com. You can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/growthfromdarkness.